Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the wonderful things you are doing for the community, that's for sure. And folks, this program is sponsored in part by the Pittsburgh Symphony Members Orchestra and the Fairfax Education Association. We appreciate their support. As a reminder, folks, don't forget to go to our website, www.theunionedge.com. You can download a free app for your iPhone or your Android. So, you know, you can pick up the second 2 hours of this program daily, or you can listen to it on weekends, holidays, so on and so forth. It's really kind of neat. You get the podcast, you get the stream, you get the live program, and you can send us some feedback. So if you want to say that, you know, whatever, we appreciate the feedback, that's for sure. Let's see. Today we're talking with our friends from Politico, and we're talking with Sarah Klein or Carlin Smith on the opioid epidemic. Sarah, welcome to the Union Edge.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you being with us today. What is it that we have to do with preventing, stopping this horrific opioid epidemic that's going on in the United States right now?
So I think there's two kind of categories of people you might want to think about dealing with. So we have people that have maybe already become addicted to these medicines and need help and treatment. Mm-hmm. And one of the big things our country needs to do right now is think about how we can better fund opioid treatment. So we do know there's medicines out there that can help many patients deal with the addiction, but oftentimes there's not enough doctors or clinics or so forth for them to see, and there's not enough money for them to get treatment. So that's a big issue. The other side of the coin is, how do we prevent new people from becoming newly addicted? And some of that revolves around how we think about treating pain. So is it always appropriate to give somebody an opioid versus other types of pain medications that are less addictive? Or maybe even, are there people who should not be getting medication at all and can maybe treat their pain through different techniques like physical therapy? So that'll really require sort of change in doctors' prescribing practices as well. And then, of course, there's the illegal flood of illegal opioids as well into this country, and that's a whole other problem to try and solve as well.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And I got to tell you, there are a lot of other resources that are out there. I do not know or understand how it got to the point where doctors in this country were just, I twisted my wrist. Here's a prescription for opioids. I mean, and that's the way it seems to me. And then I hear some of the stories about one town in West Virginia with 600 people that over a million doses were prescribed and sent to this township of 600 people. I mean, my God, how does that happen? I mean,
Go
ahead.
So one of the things that's over the years, initially when some of these opioids first came on the market, a lot of the drug industry was marketing them as being safe, that they were designed in such a way that even though we know sort of opium and opioids in general can be very addictive medicines, that these would not have the same addictive properties. And for a long time, I think the mainstream medical community really took that to heart, and that helped lead to a lot of the overprescribing and addiction. So there's definitely been a change now in how those drugs can be marketed and how doctors think about treating it. But we're still sort of dealing with the fallout of this very long period of time where people did not realize they should be on high alert with these drugs.
There you go. Is there any proof, that some of the pharmaceutical companies were continuing to pump the drugs into communities knowing that there was probably a problem?
There definitely have been some lawsuits where companies have gotten in trouble for, again, how they've marketed or distributed the drugs. There's been some cases where the DEA has got involved and said, you know, there's these processes where companies, including not just the actual drug manufacturers, but the distributors of the drugs, are really supposed to flag suspicious orders, you know, when they see way more drug being ordered than makes sense given the market they're going to and how much comparable places are ordering. And there have been some cases where there's been concern of whether these companies were kind of turning a blind eye to purchasers of their drug that should have rang, you know, alarm bells that, you know, these probably wasn't going to a doctor with, you know, good prescribing practices. It might be going to a pill mill or something like that.
There you go. Is there any place that we can go to today that's got a lot of good information about how we can beat back this epidemic? What are some of the things that are out there, like physical therapy or some other ideas that people can go and find more information?
No, I think the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, has a lot of helpful information out there. There's certainly a lot of nonprofit groups trying to kind of do work around the crisis and help people. So that's always good. Local community health centers. And there's been a lot of great reporting in the media around kind of solutions to the crisis as well.
There you go. We appreciate it very much. Sarah, how do we find out more about you and what you do for Politico?
Sure. You can go to politico.com and take a look at our health policy coverage. You can also follow me on Twitter at Sarah Carlin. That's Carlin with a K.
There you go. We appreciate that very much. And if you include us at The Union Edge, we'll retweet it for you. But in the meantime, I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.